looked and he noticed a storm coming in and this clouds were setting in, and he thought to himself, you know, should I try? You know, should I go and save this man? And he looked and he said, well, this man might not make even the journey, even if I tried to carry him. And he remembered stories of how this trail had bandits and robbers, and could this be a trap? And so he made the decision to go, and he left this man. Well, a man was coming up behind him a few hours later. Well, not a few hours, but a man was coming up. And he too was traveling this path kind of quickly because he saw the clouds coming in and he saw the storm coming in. And he too came to the same spot. He heard the man crying for help, and he looked down and he saw the same scene. Saw the man bloodied and broken. But he looked at him and he had compassion, and he said, oh, I got to try something. And so he went down, climbed down, and got this man and got him on his back, climbed up his path. And now he can imagine this guy's burden. Now he's got a full-grown man on his back. He's climbing up this, imagine this cliff he's climbing. And he gets on the trail, and he's barely just carrying this guy on this trail. And the storm does come in, and it hits them, yeah? And he's walking, and it's snowing, and a blizzard's blowing. And he's got this guy on his back, and he's encouraging him, you'll be fine. You'll be okay. You know, we're gonna pull through this. I'll get you to safety. And he's getting... And a few hours go by, and on the top of this pass was a sanctuary, a place where if you couldn't make it to the next pass, you could stay there for the night for these kinds of situations. And there was chimes hanging on the door and on the house eave there, and they heard the chimes, and he would tell the man on his back, can you hear the chimes? Can you hear the sound of the bells? We're getting close. And so a few more minutes, a few more hours passed by, and he got to where he could see the light in the window, and he'd tell the man on his back, can you see the light on your back? Can you see the light in the window? We're getting close. We're sooner than you know it. Well, they were just getting to the house a few hundred feet away, and the man tripped over something on the middle of the path. The man on his back went one way, he went another way, and so he's calling out for this stranger. And he's feeling out in the middle of the path, and he comes across a form in the middle of this path. He feels a dead body that's been in the middle of the path. Well, he finally gets the other person on his back, and he gets this man to safety. Well, the man that died on the path was the man before. But while he got this other man to safety, then when they got into the place, they were both saved. And this story has a great illustration that I want to point out for today. That when you go to work for somebody else, you end up getting blessed yourself. You see the man, as he helped the other man save his life, in return his life was spared, yeah? And this illustration I would like to bring out today, that when we go to work for somebody else, we end up getting blessed too. We end up having something that the Lord has created for us. And I'd like to invite you folks to open up to our memory verse today, our memory text, Matthew 25:21. And it says, his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. And so it's the same with the second one too. He who also had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents beside you. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. You see, these two guys, they were given talents, and they worked very hard. And what did they do? They doubled it, yeah? And when their master had come back, they offered their talents back to the Lord. And they said, here you are, we've doubled it. But what does the master do? He says, good and faithful servant. You know, if the master, instead of like saying, oh, take a vacation to Hawaii or something, thank you for working so hard, what does he say? He says, enter into the joy of your Lord. And he gives them more work to do. Isn't that a strange way to reward someone? Give them more work and then tell them, enter into the joy of your Lord. That's kind of a strange way to reward somebody. I'm supposed, in this story, Jesus is illustrating what Albert Schweitzer once said, that those, one thing I know, the only ones wanting to be truly happy are ones who sought out and found how to serve. And you can see that kind of, you see that's kind of true in a lot of ways. Sometimes you open a newspaper and you find yourselves reading through the Dear Abby and the Ann Landers, and you hear people just pouring out their my life is so miserable, I'm not happy in my life, you know, what can I do? And sometimes you read back Ann Dear Abby writing back, if you like to get past your own misery, find someone worse off than you and try to do something to make their life better and you be happy as well, right? So you see, it's kind of true in the secular world today, yeah? That if you do good for others, you'll be blessed as well. And it's the same as what Albert Schweitzer was trying to say and what the parable of Jesus was trying to say, yeah? And it's also the same for the opposite, yeah? When we see people that are always selfish, self-indulgent, and they want to, they're always out for themselves, always more, more, more for me, me, me. Have you always noticed that they're never happy? They're never the ones that are happy. They're never the ones that are satisfied with their life. They always want more and more. But those that are like Mother Teresa, those that have dedicated their life to helping others, and even in small ways, are in the joy of their Lord. They're always happy. If you ever see a picture of Mother Teresa, even though she's old and worn and weared out, she's always got a wonderful smile on her face. I wonder what that smile is. That's the joy of the Lord. The ability, always working for others, and the joy of the Lord was always in her heart. Another story about a man named Steve Mackey. I don't know if you're ever familiar with Steve Mackey. Steve Mackey at one time was the heavyweight kickboxing champion. And that's how I knew him. I used to watch his fights once in a while, way back, not too far back, but that's how I knew Steve Mackey, who he was. He is the world kick champion boxer. And the Lord had found him in the ring. And his story, he had told his testimony how the Lord had found him. And what's really amazing too, it was an Adventist pastor that had shared the Lord with him, and he had found the Lord through this Adventist pastor. Well, his story is in a book written by Jeanette Johnson, and it's entitled Paint Your World with Love, and it's a book of collaborated with a bunch of other stories on how people found the Lord and how they've given their life to the Lord and how they glorify the Lord in their life today. And Steve Mackey is one of them. Well, anyways, this book went out to the public, and everybody was so amazed at Steve Mackey's story, his testimony, those that knew Steve Mackey. And they wanted to hear him speak. And so they asked him to speak at this, Billingham, Washington Adventist Academy. And so Steve Mackey, he's from Tennessee, flew up to Billingham. And this pastor that had introduced him to the Lord, Lee Vanden, decided to drive up from Auburn. And so he drove up and they met, and they were at this gym. And Lee Vanden came across Steve Mackey crying in the corner. You know, this kickboxing champion. He's like 6 feet something, just muscles on muscles, you know. And he was crying in the corner, and Lee Vanden asked him, you know, is everything okay? And he looked at his friend and he said, you know, if there's one thing I hope that is the message that is sent tonight, is that they don't see Lee Vanden, they see Jesus Christ. They see that Jesus can be a friend to them. They see that Jesus can be the best friend that is living to wanting to save their souls. And that was a burden on Lee Vanden's heart at that moment. Well, the pastor encouraged him that I'm quite sure that will happen. So they prayed and he went out. He told his testimony. And it was finished, and you know, imagine everybody wants to get the autograph of a kickboxing champion, right? And so they all lined up and he's signing autographs and everything, and he's meeting different people. And a little boy comes in about 10 years old and he goes, Steve Mackey, can I have your autograph? So Steve Mackey kind of gets down kind of low and he puts his hand on the shoulder and he goes, I'll be happy to give you autograph, but can you answer me one question? He goes, yeah. He says, out of tonight, what is the most important message that I hope you remember. And boy, gives him a big smile, and he goes, that Jesus can be your friend, the best friend you can ever have, and I can have a personal relationship with him. And Lee Venice goes, yes, yes. And he signed his autograph and gave him a big hug, and he sent them off, you know. So now they're getting in the car. They got to drive down to Auburn's, which I don't know how far it is. I know it's a few hundred miles. And Lee Venden, his pastor friend, tells him, you know, I know you're tired. You sit in that seat. It reclines. You can go to sleep. And Steve looks at Lee and he goes, sleep? You want me to sleep? I'm not tired. You heard what the boy said, Lee? He said he got it. He said that Jesus can be his best friend for the rest of his life. Jesus wants to have a relationship with him. You understand? This is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. And Steve Mackey was telling Lee how excited he was. And he says, I can't sleep. This is the best feeling I've ever had. This can be addicting. And he was telling his friend. And he looks over at Lee Venn and he goes, and you get paid to do this? You get paid to teach people how to know the Lord and to introduce, you get paid to this? And they drove home, you know. What about the last servant? What happened to the last servant? We can find it in Matthew 25, 22. And it says, I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reaped where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed. Therefore, you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at coming I would have received back my own interest. And if you read on in verse 29, he's cast out to outer darkness. You know, his talent is taken away and he's cast out to outer darkness. And so what is the point on this third servant? He comes with his talent that he hides in the ground, and what he's really saying is, here's back. At least I didn't lose it. I'm giving back to you what you gave me. At least I didn't lose it. What does this servant really lose? If you really think of it, he lost three things. First of all, he lost the joy of the Lord, like the other two servants got. The second, he lost what he did have, right? His talent was taken away from him. And then the third, he was thrown into outer darkness. So it's three things that he lost. So what's the point in this story? What is the illustration that Jesus wants us to see in this parable, in this story? Sometimes we say it amongst friends or amongst others. And what I'm trying to say is that when we don't use it, when that servant didn't take advantage of that talent, he lost it. When we don't use it, we lose it. A story, a few years ago, I hurt my knee playing baseball, and I went into the doctor, and he felt around and twisted my knee a little bit, and come to find out I had a torn meniscus on the side. And so he said, we're going to go in there and do a little surgical maneuver in there, and you'll be all right. But in the meantime, while we do this surgery on you, you're going to have to find yourself a comfortable spot in your bed for 6 weeks, you know, and elevate that knee up high. And I was like, yeah, bed for 6 weeks, you know. And he says, let your wife know that, you know, tell your wife to do all the things that you need to have and everything. You think Joey wanted to hear wait on me for 6 weeks? You know, she thought I was operating on the wrong side. It thought in my head, you know. But anyways, after 6 weeks, I went back to the doctor, and we took off the bandage. It was kind of like an ace bandage, and we took it off. And I'm not going to show you now, but my right side knee and leg, actually my whole leg, was way smaller than my left side. And I could barely bend it. And the doctor said, it's because you haven't used it. And so if you didn't use your leg, the muscles start, I don't know the term of it, atrophied, yes, and you start to lose it. And I think that's what Jesus was trying to say in this parable. And it said, if you don't use it, you lose it, just the same way as my leg. I didn't use it, and so I started to use my leg. And it took me months of therapy and exercise and stretching. And even to this day, my knee is, you know, not 100% as my left side. Change channel. Why does every gospel end with a commission? Every gospel ends with commission. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John ends with commission. It says Mark 28, 19 and 20 says, go and make disciples of all nations. Mark 16, 15 to 16 says, go into all the world and preach to every creature. Luke 24, 47 and 48 says, you are witnesses of these things. Go and preach to the world. And John 20, 21, my favorite, as God has sent me, this is Jesus talking, I'm sending you, right? Sending us, right? So every gospel ends with a commission. Now that we've read that, does it sound like God is saying that he is depending on us to spread the word? Kind of sounds like that, yeah? Sounds like God is saying, is depending on us that we have to do the commission and finish the work. Sometimes we hear people pray, Lord, help us finish the work, that you can come sooner, that we can see you faster, see you earlier, right? The sooner Jesus comes, we've heard people say, the sooner we get to go to heaven. But is God really depending on us to finish the work? Do you recall a story? And it's found in Luke 19:40. The story is about Jesus. He's coming through Mount Olive on his donkey, yeah? And he's riding on his donkey, and he's coming to the city of Jerusalem. And what's happening when Jesus is coming through on Mount Olive, yeah? He's on his donkey, and there's people waving palm branches, and they're waving, Hosanna, King of the Israel, you know, and praise. And there are some Jewish leaders there, and they tell Jesus, you know, Jesus, you're too loud, you know. You got to quiet your followers. And what does Jesus say? We can find that. I'm sorry. You guys are probably there before me. What Jesus says is, if these are quiet, I'm going to cause the stones. You guys can help me out, yeah? If I'm going to cause the stones to praise me, yeah? So if the followers of Jesus were quiet, if we were quiet, what would Jesus use? He would use the stones. You think Jesus would use angels? We read through the Bible, Jesus has used angels to do his work. You know, John the Revelator saw angels often. Daniel saw angels often. God was using angels to minister to his people. He also used visions and dreams. So we all read through Bible that God used a lot of ways to get his work done. So does God? So does God really need us to do the commission? I'd like to invite you to open up to Romans 9:28. In fact, Jesus says he's going to finish the work himself. 9:28. And this is Paul, and he's quoting a prophecy from Isaiah, yeah? And he says, for he will finish the work. I'm going to start from 27, yeah? Isaiah also cried out concerning Israel, through the number of the children of Israel by as the sand of the sea, the remnant will be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the Lord will make a short work upon the earth. So we see, God wanting to finish, he's going to finish the work himself, yeah? So if he doesn't need us, if he's going to finish the work, why did he give us the four commissions? Why did he tell us to go out and make disciples of men, to go out and baptize them in the name of Jesus Christ and the Father? Why did he give us that commission? I'd like to open up Desire of Ages, page 142. It says, God could have reached his objective in saving sinners without our aid. But in order for us, this is it, for in order for us to enter into his joy, where do we hear that joy thing? To enter into his joy, and this is the meaning of joy right here, this is the joy of seeing souls redeemed by his sacrifice, we must participate in his labor for their redemption. So it's a joy that we enter into when we help God help others find him. Yeah, it's a joy that God wants to bestow upon us. We also read in Steps to Christ, page 80. The only way to grow in grace is to disinterestedly doing the very work with Christ, which Christ has enjoyed. And that's like disinterestedly meaning don't be biased. Don't choose who you want to go to. Being open to all. Being open to all people. So God is saying, being open to all people upon us to engage to the extent of our abilities in helping and blessing those who need the help we can give them. Strength comes by exercise. Activity is the very condition of life. Those who endeavor to maintain a Christian life by passively accepting the blessing that comes through the means of grace and doing nothing for Christ are simply trying to live by eating without working. And as it is in the spiritual, it's also in the natural world. This always results in a degeneration and decay. A man who refuses to exercise his limbs would soon lose all power to use them. Use it or lose it. Thus, the Christian who will not exercise his God-given power not only fails to grow up in Christ, but he loses the strength that he has already had. So if we don't bubble over, if we don't spill over with what we have, with how you feel and how you live in your life, how Jesus works in your life, if we don't spill over and share that with others, God eventually is going to take it away from us. And he's going to throw it away. He might even give it to somebody else. So I ask you a question. Do you think there can anyone be lost? Yes, there is. And it's not the ones that we're trying to save. It's us. It's me. We're the ones that are lost. If we don't spill over and share of the love and redeeming grace that God has given, bestowed upon us, yeah? Steps to Christ, page 79. The effort to bless others will react in blessings upon ourselves. This was the purpose of God in giving us a part to act in the plan of salvation. He has granted men the privilege of becoming partakers of the divine nature and in their turn of diffusing blessings to their fellow men. This is the highest honor, the greatest joy that is possible for God to bestow upon men. Those who thus become participants in labors of love are brought nearest to the Creator. In my mind's eye, this is my imagination now. In my mind's eye, I see God. He's got this big meeting going on in heaven, yeah? He's got all his angels there. And he tells his angels, you know, there's something I want to give the people on earth. I want to give them some joy. I want to give them happiness. I want to give them something to look forward in their life, some meaning. And he says, and I need your help. And he's looking at the angels. I need your help. Is there any way, can you guys help us out with this? I would like to have everybody's help on this. And an angel raises his hand from way in the back. He goes, Lord, I got one. He said, come and share it. This angel comes up and he tells the Lord, you know what I like, Lord? I like when you send me down to earth and you give me the opportunity to work in somebody's life that they may see you, they may see your redeeming power. Oh, Lord, that's what I like to see. I like to do that. That's why I always raise my hand when you give me those kind of missions, Lord. And that's what I think the Lord wants to bestow upon us, his joy. Yeah? The highest privilege and the greatest joy that is possible for heaven to bestow upon men is sharing Jesus with other people, spilling over because of him, right? That's why we all come to church, right? That's why we all sit in the pew every Sabbath. That's why we all walk through our lives every day is because of him. That's why we all fall on our knees every morning and surrender our hearts to Jesus and ask the Lord to help us through our walk and to surrender self and to is because of Jesus. And Jesus wants everybody to see that picture. Jesus has doesn't want to see nobody be hurt, right? He wants to see everybody be saved. You want to spend more time with Jesus? This is a question now, two questions. You want to spend more time with Jesus? You want to be brought nearest the Creator? Lost people matter so much to God that's what he spends most of his time doing. He's looking for them. He's looking for lost souls. And if you want to hang out with Jesus, you're going to have to do most of what he's looking for lost souls. He's our great shepherd. He puts us in the fold and he goes out looking for another one until the fold is full, until earth is coming, right? Step to Christ, page 80. If you go to work as Christ designs that his disciples shall and win souls for him, you will feel the need of a deeper experience and greater knowledge in divine things and will hunger and thirst after righteousness. You will plead with God and your faith will be strengthened and your soul will drink deeper draughts at the well of salvation. Encountering oppositions and trials will drive you to the Bible and prayer. You will grow in grace and the knowledge of Christ, and you will develop a rich experience. Lately, we've been sold on an idea that we need professionals to come in and do our work. We need the guys with the big guns. They got all the right texts that can lined up nice and tight to prove their case, yeah? And we bring them in. It's kind of like the Greyhound model. Come sit in and leave the driving to us, yeah? And so we bring in these professionals, yeah? But actually what we're doing is we're shortchanging ourselves. What are we shortchanging ourselves from? We're shortchanging ourselves from the joy, the highest honor, and the privilege of helping others ourselves, right? Why would we want to miss out on all of that? Why would we want someone else to do it for us? The privilege and joy that's been given to us. Why would we want somebody else to do that? I believe that God didn't give us the commission to give to somebody else to do all the work. I think he gave it to each and every one of us. He did give it to the 12 disciples at the beginning, but it was for all of us. Then what do we say? Because really, Adrian, I haven't gone to school or Amazing Facts, or I haven't gone to workshops. I don't have all the proof texts to be doctrinally right. So what do we really say and to whom? What I want to clear up right now is an assumption. An assumption that I'm not saying all of you folks have, but I'm quite sure you have heard it amongst talking amongst other people. And it's the assumption that we need to be at a certain level in order to open our mouth and speak about God. That we need to have a doctrine in theology or we need to have all the right texts put together to share good news of Jesus. And I wanna open up this assumption. Jesus gave us some clues, yeah? And we can find the clues. So what do we really say and to whom do we say it? We find a story in Mark 5:19. The story is about Jesus has sailed across the sea to Galilee, right? And he's come to Decapolis, and what is the first thing he meets? He meets a demoniac, right? Well, he heals this demoniac from this terror that he's living with, these demons, and he sends the demons into the pigs, right? And the pigs all die, they fall over. And the townspeople, they come and they look at Jesus and they say, you know, you're kind of hard on our economy, Lord. You know, we want you to leave. Can you please leave? And knowing Jesus, he doesn't want to be where he doesn't want to, right? And so he's about to leave, and just before he gets into the boat, what happens? The demoniac grabs onto him, right? And he begs God, take me with you. And what does Jesus say? Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has compassion on you. Did this demoniac do that? Did he do this? Sorry. Did Jesus do that? Did the demoniac do that? Because next time Jesus was in Decapolis, what happened? There was 4,000 men that came out to see him, right? And that was just, that wasn't women or children. That was just men. And they come out. They came out, and Jesus had to feed all of them. And so, but some of us, we want to broaden our pool, yeah? The Lord said, go out to your families and friends and preach the wonderful things that God has done for us, the mighty things, how the Lord has compassion us and he's filled our hearts with grace, right? Giving grace to us. But some of us, we want to go farther out, right? We want to go out to strangers. What do we do if we want to go out to strangers? What do we do? Our first objective, if we want to go out to strangers, is make friends. We want to make friends. Think of it. How influential are we? If somebody comes and knock on your door, kind of dressed like me with a bunch of books, and they come knock on your door, and how influential are we when they come in and they want to preach truth that they feel they have? Do we invite them in and say, come on, sit right here and here's some water. Share with me what you want to hear. No, we bring out our study guides and everything, and we want to not debate, but we want to share what we believe in, right? So how are we influential to strangers? But if it's a friend, if it's a family member that has something in their heart that's yearning, a problem, how much more are they open to the word of the Lord? Are you able to reach them even better or even farther? I think so. Just like all Jesus said to the man, said, you can't come with me. Go to your family and friends and tell them what mighty things God has done for you. So the first thing that we should do if we want to go out to strangers is make friends. And when we make friends, what do we build up after we're making friends? After we rub shoulders in a while, we get to know each other. We get to build a friendship. And after friendship, you kind of have some trust in that person you've met, yeah? And you get to have, they've proven themselves trustworthy. And then you build confidence. And then you bid them. Then you give them Jesus Christ, right? Ministry of Healing, page 143 says, Christ's method alone will give true success in reaching people. What was his method? The Savior mingled with men as of one who desired their good. He showed them his sympathy. He ministered to their needs. He won their confidence, and then he bade them follow me. He met all the things in the person's life first before he even said one word of following him. Still, it goes on. There is a need in coming closer to the people in personal effort. A great need in personal ministry. Greater results would be seen when the poor is relieved, the sick cared for, the sorrowing comforted, the ignorant instructed, the inexperienced counseled, accompanied by the power of prayer and the power of the love of God, the work cannot and will not be without fruit. So that's how Jesus made friends. He reached over to their lives and he ministered to them and he befriended them and he showed them sympathy. So you say anybody can do it. We just go out to our friends. We tell our friends the wonderful and mighty things Jesus has done for us. But what do we say? That's what we say. That's what we say. Remember the wonderful things God has done for us, for me, for you. I'm quite sure everyone here sitting in this pew has got a testimony. Because if you don't even got a testimony, you would still be outside there, right? The Lord has found you someplace in your life, And there is something that has drawn you, your first love, and has kept you here every Sabbath, day in and day out, and has brought you to your knees every day, surrendering your love to God, surrendering your heart to God. That's what you share. Because people are not going to look at doctrines, and they're not going to look, they will look at doctrines, and they will, but they'll look at it more when they see God working in your life. When they see the Holy Spirit, when they see fruits of love, joy, peace, kindness, long-suffering working in your life. When they see that your heart has been touched by the grace of God as witnesses for Christ, we will tell them what we know. We have seen and heard and felt concerning the way he has led us. I want to close with this story. Larry Claridge, he's probably about he's probably about 82, 84 years old. He goes to the Walla Walla Church up in, I forgot the name of it, but up there in Washington, the Walla Walla Church. And Larry Claridge was driving home one day, been in the church all his life, you know, elder, and he's on his way home, and he saw a man on the side of the road laying there, you know, trying to get up, and he thought this man was hurt, and so he pulled over on the side of the road, and come to find out this man was drunk, just drunk, couldn't walk, nothing. Well, knowing Larry Claridge, he helped him up, picked him up, put him in the truck. After some moments of mumbling and everything, kind of realized where this man lived. And so he took this man to his place. And what he lived in was a little cab over camper that was in this parking lot, that was in this lot, empty lot, all by itself. And put this man in, took his clothes off, well, took his shoes off and made him comfortable, laid him down. Well, before he left, Larry Claridge wrote a note and left it on the desk there. He said, "Hello, my name is Larry Claridge. If you need any help, be free to call me." And Larry did get calls, but most of the time they're like 3-4 o'clock in the morning from bartenders calling him up saying, "Hey, there's a man here that's gotten your number. And he says that you'll come and help him anytime." And Larry would say, "Okay, I'll be there." And he'd ask him when and where and end up, and he'll go pick him up. And he would pick this man up faithfully every time from a bar, you know, good old Larry Claridge, and bring him home. And some nights this guy would be so drunk that he'd be afraid to leave him alone because he was afraid the guy would vomit and drown on his own vomit. And so Larry Claridge would stay all night and keep him there. And this is months, months, until one day Larry Claridge, man, woke up and he looked at Larry and goes, "You know, why are you always here for me? Why are you always bailing me out, you know? Every morning I wake up drunk, hangover, and I see your face there. What's up with you? Why are you always bailing me out?" And Larry looks at him. He goes, "You know what?" And the man says, "Why do you want to be such a good friend to me?" And Larry looked at the man and he said, "You know, because I have a friend that bails me out. Bails me out all the time." He goes, "You do?" He said, "Yeah. What's your friend's name?" "The name is Jesus. Jesus Christ." "Never heard of him," Larry, this man said. Larry goes, "You want to meet him?" I said, "Yeah, I'd like to meet him." He said, "I meet him in the Bible, so I don't own one. So I'll get you one." And so for another few months, Larry Claridge is picking this man up from the bars and giving him Bible studies in the same time. And this is going on for months, and he's giving him Bible studies. And 2 months later, the man asks Larry, "By the way, what church you go to? I never heard of what church you ever went to." He goes, "Oh, you want to know what church I go to? I go to the Seventh-day Adventist church up there on the hill." He goes, "Oh, yeah?" He says, "You familiar with it?" "No, never been there." He says, "You like to go?" "Oh, yes, I would like to go." And so Larry goes, "You want to come? Let's go." The man goes, "What do I wear?" He says, "Well, got this baseball cap, these blue jeans, this flannel shirt, and my tennis shoes." And Larry goes, "Perfect. I'll pick you up next Saturday." And so he took him to church. And so now Larry's picking him up from bars. He's giving him Bible studies, and he's taking him to church on Saturdays. And this is going on for months. And then with tears in his eyes, Larry Claridge, I didn't hear the story, but I heard it from a friend, a minister. And with tears in his eyes, Larry is crying. And he looks at this pastor friend and he goes, "And I got to see the man get baptized. I got to see the man give his heart to the Lord. And he's still walking. And that man has given up drinking. That man is also a faithful member in the church." What do we say? To whom do we say it? We tell them what great and mighty things that the Lord has done for us. If you are bubbling over, if we have made ourselves a vessel for God, and we are bubbling over, we share that with other people. Let's open our hymns to hymn number 340.